You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, May 18th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday. You know what that means. Today on the program, Cliff Schechter. And giving us my weekly movie recommendation, the voice of Archer on the program, Archer. The voice of Bob on the program, Bob's Burgers. Maybe you know him as Ben on Dr. Cass. Maybe you knew him as Coach McGurk. Maybe you knew him as John Benjamin in the show John Benjamin Has a Van on Comedy Central. Maybe you know him as the voice of the Majority Report. Of course, I'm talking about John Benjamin. But before we get to that dude, let's go to this other dude. Of course, I'm talking about Cliff Schechter as we recap the news of the week or whatever it is that we do on Fridays. But before we even do that, we, of course, need the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter. Libertas LLC, new media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Hello, Cliff. How are you?
I'm doing swell today, Sam. How are you?
I'm doing great. Wow, you sound like you are you in a studio now? Your acoustics sound awesome.
Do they really?
No. It sounds like you're in your garage.
You got me all excited, and then you just rip into me. So what you're saying is the sound sucks. Is that basically it?
I'm saying I've heard you better.
Oh, well, I don't know. I'm on my phone. I'm in my office. Who knows, man? I think it's AT&T, maybe? It's a conspiracy.
Yeah, no, of course. It always is. So, Cliff, another interesting week in the political world. You know, I want to talk about the PAC. Let's talk about that PAC thing for a little bit because, you know, we've talked a little bit about this. I really want to get into this Matt Miller piece because I know and the demise of Americans Elect and his poo-pooing of the demise of the Americans Elect. But we'll get into that.
There's a lot of poo-poo there.
There's a lot, believe me. So much poo-poo.
More poo-poo than you ever wanted to see, quite
exactly.
Frankly.
And this episode of this pack, and it also comes, this has been a wonderful week for the late Andrew Breitbart because his site has now gone full-on birther. And I know.
Yes, that pamphlet from 1991 with the misprint in it.
Yeah. And before we get to that, let's talk first about this super PAC that was to be launched, or I don't know if the PAC actually got launched, but this guy Ricketts, who is a part owner of the Chicago Cubs, basically commissioned a plan to go after President Obama because apparently, and I don't know if you're aware of this, apparently, President Obama belonged to a church whose pastor said things that many people consider controversial. I'm not so concerned. You know, I can't remember
his name because I don't think we ever heard very much about him.
No, I think it was a Reverend. It was a Reverend. Oh, here it is, Reverend Wright.
And how could he be a reverend? Obama's a Muslim.
Well, no. Okay. All right. Yeah. You see, this is.
I don't understand.
Yeah. Well, this is not so easy. You got to be smart to figure this thing out.
This is like 12-dimensional chess, isn't it?
Oh, we're talking 24-dimensional chess. Yes. We know that President Obama is a Muslim, but we know that he pretended to be a Christian so that he could absorb the radical theology of a guy who you've seen the videotape of him actually quoting somebody else talking about chickens and roosting.
Black liberation, right? Which sounds really scary because it has the word black in it. And, so it frightened me immediately.
Absolutely, and liberation. And we all know what happened the last time black people got liberated. Then the next thing
never
you know,
good. Never good.
100 years later, they want the vote. So
exactly.
And so,
and perhaps maybe to eat lunch next to you.
Right. And
you
know. And then, you know, first they get they get emancipated as slaves, then they want the vote, and then all of a sudden the next thing you know, President Obama's hugging a professor at Harvard. Okay, so
it was a pretty straight line from A to Z there.
Right. Now, so this super PAC was going to come out, it had a 68-page glossy report outlining how if John McCain had only brought up this issue of Reverend Wright, we could very well have Vice President Sarah Palin right now. And
in fact, the glossy, wonderful report started off by quoting the aforementioned Joe Ricketts, or Joe Hantavirus, as I like to call him, who I don't even get a slight laugh for that. Okay, that wasn't that
no,
good.
No, I laughed.
You know, you know where I was going. Laughing on the inside.
No,
I
I've heard you do that joke before, but
I know I already did that for you, and you laughed that time. So I'll
I
take
did.
It. So Joe Ricketts, who was quoted at the beginning of this thing, saying that the beginning of this report, saying that this ad that had been created by Fred Davis, who was the ad guy for McCain, but never used, he said, had that ad only been used, McCain would have won. All other laws of gravity and everything else going on at that time would have changed, and people would have stopped and said, looked at Reverend Wright, and then looked at President Obama and said, oh my God, they're black.
Right.
And that pretty much would have been everything.
Right. Now, of course, this is all premised on the notion, and you know, we'll get to the more interesting part about this in just a second, but this is all premised on the notion, and this is an important dynamic to keep in mind because the conservative ecosphere essentially is banking on the idea that if only, and we're seeing this with the Breitbart, with the vetting, this time we're going to vet them. You see, when you've got a Muslim, Kenyan, socialist, Manchurian candidate who
communist,
wants...
Communist, anti-white Christian.
Anti-imperialist, anti-white, anti-Christian,
Black
anti-American.
Black liberation Christian.
All those things. We know what it is.
Okay.
When they become president, I mean, when they forged their birth certificate way back when so that he knows he can become president, when they do that, they never, ever institute their plans during the first term when they have the majority of their party controlling both houses. They always wait until the second term when they have neither control of the House or the Senate, or maybe just control of one of the houses. That's the way
they
do it.
Why would you do it when you've got 60 votes in the Senate when you perhaps could do it when you have 48 or so?
Right. That's why. Because they're also very – because they're playing 12-dimensional chess.
Now, that's right.
Now, you also – it also has to do with the fact that when you're that guy, you have the ability to pay off all the officials in Hawaii. You have the ability to forge a certificate of live birth, but you do not have the ability to forge a birth certificate from Hawaii. So you have to go back in time and make it statutorily impossible for that to be released because, of course, we know that in Hawaii, what they do is they carve their birth certificates out of the lava that comes out of one of their volcanoes,
ooh,
which
nice.
Coincidentally is like kryptonite to a Kenyan socialist Manchurian candidate. Because if he goes, because he would have to forge it himself, and then, of course, you know, he would get rickets, which takes us back to rickets.
That was an awesome, awesome, what would I call it?
Call back, swing around. Now,
there you go.
But here's the part of the story that is more relevant. And it seems that, now
that Breitbart's dead?
Well, no. The part of the story that's more relevant is, although Breitbart plays into this, part of the story that's really relevant that I want to talk to you about is, because now that Romney has sworn this off, we'll see the ads anyways, but Romney has sworn this off, there's a couple of things that come up. One is that this huge amount of super PAC money, because it's dominated by billionaires and millionaires, they may not be on the Republican message. That's one aspect, which is going to be a problem for Romney.
Yes.
Two is, because there's so much money sitting out there, you and I both know, you've been you've worked on campaigns. You and I both know this is a horrible losing strategy. And so there's only one explanation for this. There's Republican consultants, conservative consultants out there who see these big, fat, stupid billionaires who are convinced that if only McCain ran that ad, that McCain would be president now. And these guys are just – these are just massive teats of money. And these
right.
consultants come and just start suckling on them.
And they're either dumb enough to think that that would work – or maybe they don't even care because they just want to sort of make a name for themselves. And so you're the guy that, in this case, it doesn't seem like, because now he seems to be backing away from it. But, you know, there'll be some Foster Freeze types out there, you know, aspirin between the knees types, who are proud of their 1950s views, who have money.
Yeah, I think it's the former.
Wait.
I think it's the former. I actually think that what happens when you have that kind of money is that every opinion you have, you, because it is so easy for you to execute those ideas, that you're convinced that they're absolutely right. So, I mean, they must be.
You made that amount of money, and you made it completely on your own, with no contribution from American society, and therefore, just by the fact that you have that opinion, it must be correct.
I actually think that's the case. And so I think what happened is, you know, this guy Ricketts is sitting around. He says that quote, right, to one of the consultants that just maybe be hanging around with them. They think, oh my gosh, that's brilliant. And what they're thinking in their mind is ad buys, printing costs, consulting, fake poll, all sorts of different things in their mind that they're going to skim off the top.
And it's awesome.
And you know that's what happened because they quoted him back to himself.
To tell them how awesome he was as a reminder because he didn't know.
And so this was just a way for them to make tons of cash. And because no
– And they made it 54 pages. We don't know. There may be a lot of big pictures in there. I'm guessing there
pictures,
are.
But
there's probably like some of Sarah Palin in a bikini and, you know, all sorts of stuff. But it gets to – whatever.
What's
ahead,
the sir. Commission you get on buying a $4 million ad buy in Florida?
A ton of freaking money.
I mean, could it be – a 10%, you know?
Yeah, it'd probably be, my guess would be somewhere 10 to 15% in there, yeah, depending upon their arrangement. But yeah, something like that.
I mean, we're talking about somebody stands to make several hundreds of thousands of dollars just to convince this billionaire that, yeah, you know, your idea, you're right.
Dude, totally. Jeremiah Wright was the difference. but I think one of the important things here, amidst all of our having fun with these idiots, is that. It doesn't mean they necessarily can win, but it does mean that they can impact elections in a serious, serious way, as well as our body politic. You know, I mean, they can lead to even more, if it's possible, toxic politics and polarization and people holding even worse views of our elected officials and other people out there. And so what Citizens United, I think there was a good piece this week who was by Tubin, I don't know if you read it in The New Yorker,
mm-hmm.
on he basically said how Chief Justice Roberts orchestrated this Citizens United decision. This is what they've given us, is where these guys who, just by the fact that they're billionaires in an age where we've you know, we've mass-produced billionaires through our tax and regulatory and other policies, have such an outsized influence on what we're talking about in these campaigns. Again, whether it's good strategy or stupid strategy. You know, in the case of in what just happened in the Senate race in Nebraska, Ricketts, you know, parachuted in with $250,000 for advertising the last week, and because the two, there's no establishment anymore in the Republican Party, but because the two guys that were favored, let's call it, the state treasurer and the attorney general had beaten the crap out of each other with themselves and their super PAC allies for the better part of a year, she was in a position where she could sneak through, and they dumped in $250,000 for her, and she won. Now, that, without that $250,000, I don't care what the hell is going on. She doesn't win.
Right.
And so Ricketts has already bought himself at least a Senate candidate, and perhaps if she beats Bob Kerry, a senator. And that is what we've got going on today.
I definitely think that huge money, we have yet to see even remotely the impact of this, because it's going to have much more impact in the states, in the congressional races, in the Senate races, because that type of money going into a situation like that has such an unbelievable impact. I mean,
to give you, just to make that clear, to actually put all that in perspective for people, her entire campaign, the now Senate nominee, State Senator Deb Fischer, had spent $125,000 up until that point. So he doubled what she had spent during the entire campaign in a week.
And to saturate the media markets in a place like Nebraska, I got to imagine, you know, that's something that even the Majority Report could do well.
I think so. Even with your quite hefty contributions, which should be more, everyone listening.
Right, of course. But I want to get to this. The interesting thing here, though, is we're going to see the impact of this here in the states. I think this had this super PAC ending spending.
Which again, we have to at least take 2 seconds to point out that it's the ending spending super PAC that wants to spend a huge amount of money to end spending, and owned by Ricketts, who's now asking for up to $300 million from the federal government from the government. Is it the feds or is it the state government?
But it's going to come from the feds ultimately.
Right, for the new Cubs stadium and other things. So he wants to end spending except for himself, which is really pretty much consistent on the right, is that you may find one here and there, maybe Coburn, maybe he actually lives up to the garbage he spews, maybe he doesn't, I don't know. But most of these guys, the minute you actually sort of take a look at their backgrounds, they're for ending the spending for everybody but themselves.
Yes,
you know
of course.
What I mean? And Michelle Bachmann and the family farm and all the other things that we've learned about these people.
So you have this guy who could have I'm convinced that had their super PAC actually gone through with this plan, it would have helped the Obama reelection campaign. But the insightful part here, or the part that we can has sort of more implications for our overall political scene, is that this is what we're going to see. The idea, and we hear this from, and I've talked about this on this program, but we hear from the establishment, sometimes even the left establishment, sometimes the centrists, and this will be a nice segue into Matt Miller, but that the Republicans, as they push themselves further to the right, at one point they're going to have a come to Jesus moment where they realize if we want to be in American politics on a national level, we're going to have to moderate. And this is a perfect example of why that's not the case, because there is so much money out there to be made by conservatives to go in the opposite direction. You know, these people who...
The entertainment complex basically has taken over the political complex.
Exactly. And the Rush Limbaughs, the Breitbarts, right. That whole crew, there's so many people, you know, who are
making... See how much money Limbaugh made in radio. Look, Forbes just did a thing on the most... the entertainers who made the most money. Glenn Beck made $80 million last year.
Yep.
So the motivation is, I want to be like Glenn Beck. I want to sell 500,000 copies like Ann Coulter did of her book, although I'm sure conservative think tanks bought up 75% of those. But whatever. Point being, she still got the proceeds from the books. And so I want to become an Ann Coulter type, who becomes a multimillionaire. And you don't become that way as often. You do sometimes, but not as often, by being a sane person.
All right, here's the case in point. I want our listeners to think for a moment. What is it that you've heard about the presidential election this week? It's two things in my mind, maybe three things. One is that super PAC story, which was so toxic to Romney that he had to come out a day later and sort of disavow the whole thing.
And actually, it's important that we don't get past that without saying how it backfired, because in the end,
huge.
Not that Romney wouldn't. Romney made a statement that was every bit as bad as that John Kerry, you know, and this statement is going to be brought back again and again. I voted for it before I voted against it or whatever. I mean, he just said, I don't know what I said, but I stand by it.
Right.
If that's not on every ad that the Obama people do to show what a flip-flopping lack of core, just opportunist this guy is, and then they're not very good.
Right. He was lucky to actually have that creep out. So, I mean, that's the second thing. And the third thing that you would have heard this week would be this pamphlet that a publisher put out to in support of President Obama's memoir, which talks about him being born in Hawaii. The pamphlet, the publicity pamphlet, says he was born in Kenya. Now, maybe we'll talk about that ridiculousness. But those are the three biggest political stories of the week that have gotten out. And
yep.
So if you are Mitt Romney, you have taken three steps backwards in your campaign against Obama. And so the chances of Romney winning the presidency are diminished from where they were a week ago. But all those people at Breitbart are making tons of cash. Those dudes who tried to get Ricketts to sign off on this thing are making tons of cash. And this just proves my point, which is that the apparatus that drives conservative politics now is a racket.
Let me give you a great example also quickly. I know we get to move on or whatever, but there's a great piece by Alex Perrine over at Salon. And this is probably a number of weeks back. He did a whole, I think, was it a 30, top 30 hack list or something?
Uh-huh, he's doing
and
his
it was
hack
on
list.
Tucker Carlson.
Right. Exactly.
And Tucker Carlson, I think, basically is just an a-hole. I mean, he's such an arrogant twit. He's the heir, one of the heirs of the Swanson frozen food fortune. He's a relative of Fulbright, as in Fulbright scholarships. His dad was on the board of what do you call it, PBS, which is the reason he got a show there, and also a Reagan-era ambassador. This guy's had every single thing handed to him, and yet still, of course, you know, the classic example of being born on third base and thinking you hit a triple. And yet, at least initially, Carlson, when he started off at the Weekly Standard and started off the Daily Caller, wrote pieces that had some journalistic integrity to them. But the minute he sort of got it, he saw the way the right-wing entertainment complex works, and that you really need to be outlandish to have everybody to get the page views you want and the rest, that's what he started doing. And that's why they were the ones, like, grabbing Twitter, you know, out of context, mm-hmm. you know, tweets from Trayvon Martin after the kid is dead, trying to make him look like a thug, as they called him, and a gang member. You know, the kinds of things that they're doing. So that's a classic example. That Tucker Carlson has realized that he needs to be Ann Coulter or he needs to be Rush Limbaugh to get to where he needs to where he wants to be.
Right. And in this climate, that is incredibly toxic for Mitt Romney, because the last thing that Mitt Romney wants is this to be an ideological battle. He wanted to make this whole campaign a referendum on President Obama and the economy. And so every time these stories come up, it hurts his chances. And everybody knows it. I mean, you've got Grover Norquist now and Karl Rove starting to signify that, like, look, we're not even concerned with the presidency anymore. And the reason why they're not concerned with the presidency anymore is because they know they're not going to get it. And they also know that with a House and a Senate and the way that President Obama has been dealing with Republicans, they can get most of what they want at this point. And you've got this enormous sort of Frankenstein that's been created on the right now. And it cuts against the presidential aspirations for that party. And it's all about money. Now, with that
and
said,
I just want to say one last word on this quickly. I know we needed to talk about the other thing. But to me, what's amazing about this is we saw during the presidential race the fact that really all you needed is to I likened it in a column I just wrote to speed dating. You just need to have your very own billionaire. in your pocket, you know, and nothing else. If you're Newt Gingrich, you have Sheldon Adelson propping you up. If you're Rick Santorum, you have Foster Freeze propping you up. And the worst part about all this is that the presidential race is bad enough, but the outsized role this money plays on the state level or low below that is insane, as just, again, shown by the Deb Fischer having Joe Ricketts behind her. And so what we're going to get to soon, the fact that in the opinion written by Justice, I think Kennedy wrote it, the joke of an opinion they wrote on Citizens United that they wouldn't think this would have a corrupting influence. Basically, you're not going to even need to raise money from vast swaths of millionaires anymore, much less the little people who give $10 or $20. Essentially, if you can just befriend your very own billionaire or you know, 500 millionaire or whatever it is, that's all you need in a race at this point, because you'll have a super PAC go to bat for you at, for $50 million when you're running for senator in South Dakota.
And you know, again, I don't want to hammer this too much, but these people are also just people who want to jump in, and they are, I mean, this is, you know, I saw this at Air America. I saw wealthy people come in, and when they don't have an idea what they're doing except for their own sort of personal feelings about something, what the consultant class does is come in and just take their money. And doesn't, and the agenda that is supposedly shared there is not really the agenda. The agenda is to remove the money from the rich guy, and that
right,
is it.
Right.
And if that leads you down paths that really don't fulfill what the agenda what that you, the guy supposedly had, it doesn't matter, because your agenda is to get the money.
Think of the enormous influence this is going to have, because it, obviously consultants are one thing, but politicians too. Which is, how do I get that billionaire to support me? What do I need to do? What do I need to give him or her?
Right.
What policies do I need to support that I don't really care about? And, I mean, you're going to have even a smaller class. I mean, again, we're reliving the robber baron era. For anybody who saw it in history books, this is it in front of your face. This is the robber baron era, again, with where you literally have just individuals with huge names and outsized influence well beyond what even, you know, garden variety millionaires have. It's insane.
All right.
And that's, I mean, go ahead.
All right.
Sorry.
I want to segue into this Matt Miller piece, because we don't have too much time. Matt Miller wrote a piece on in the Washington Post. Now, I got to say that the last time I talked about Matt Miller on this program was probably about a year ago, when he had written a piece about cutting Social Security. And I think he was saying, you know, we should Democrats should follow the lead of Cuomo in New York, cut Social Security to fund other things, essentially. And,
right.
And I spent a decent amount of time hammering that piece. I ran into Matt Miller when he was filling in for Dylan Radigan in New York City while I was doing it. He said, you know, I heard you took issue with
my
piece.
You said some mean things about me.
No. He said, I heard you took issue with my piece. And I said, I did, yeah. I would love to have you on if you want to talk about it. He's like, yes, give me your email address. And so I gave him my email address, and the guy just puts me on his email distribution list of his column. And so all I do is start getting these mass emails from him every week with his column. And I try and respond as if, like, is this your personal email address? Nothing. And so
so that was crafty of him, crafty email marketing.
You know, I've got to get on the ball with this stuff. That's all it tells me is there's a reason why.
I'm going to go around to all sorts of people I know and say, I heard you said something bad about me. Can you give me your email?
All right. Well, so I just want, that's just full disclosure. But the piece he writes about, where he's talking about, now Americans Elect has gone under. Everybody knows what this is by now. This was the billionaire-funded attempt to get a third-party candidate. There was a couple of candidates engaged in it, Rocky Anderson and Buddy Romer, who I think have something to add to the discussion. And I thought there was some value to having them in that discussion. I had a lot of questions about Americans Elect because – you know, I think the biggest problem we have in politics is money in politics. And when you get millionaires who are sort of launching this thing, it's a little bit dubious. So
yeah.
Matt Miller basically says, those people who are dancing on the grave of American Elect, you don't understand. We need a bold, new, whatever he calls it, agenda, growth agenda, prosperity agenda. I don't know what he called it. Renew America agenda or something. And
right.
He lays out four, five convictions that he has to justify his case. One, that the Democrats' agenda today is better for the country than Republicans. At the same time, the outer limits of Democratic ambition are not equal to the challenges we face. All right, now, so folks, here's the tricky part. What are the outer ambitions of the Democratic Party? He will not pinpoint that. Because for him, the outer ambitions of the Democratic Party are actually to the right of where the center of the Democratic Party is.
Which
is already to the right of where I think it should be.
Right.
And he says the renewal agenda we need partly involves reallocating public resources from outside projected spending on programs serving seniors to big investments in the future. In other words, let's cut Social Security and Medicare.
In other words, we build roads and infrastructure and things, which are things that you and I obviously agree with a million percent. But we do that by cutting Social Security and Medicare as opposed to, say, you know, cutting defense spending by 30%, which would still, I guess, instead of spending as much as the next top 14 countries, then we'd only spend as much as the next top 12.
In fact, the words defense do not come up in his document, in this paper, in this piece. The words defense spending do not come up in this.
Right.
And then he goes on to say the renewal agenda requires tax reforms that most Democrats won't support, such as lowering corporate income and payroll tax rates. Okay, so let's just take payroll tax rates. Lower payroll tax rates, you are further defunding Social Security.
Right.
I mean, this guy.
In fact, you should actually do just the opposite, which is there's a cap right now of 110,100, I believe, or 200. And the idiocy is that in the end, all these people carping about Social Security, which again doesn't even have the slightest issue into the 2030s, and would still be 70% paid at that point.
75.
All you have to do is lift this cap, or to be more fair, frankly, just eliminate it.
Right. Because, listen, we have taken traditionally 90% of income in this country has been subjected to the payroll tax, and right now we're about 83%, and that is because of the tremendous amount of income disparity. But put that aside.
Right, people are getting a lot richer, and the ones where you need and because of the there's such a divide, then you're losing some of the people in the middle.
Yes.
So
now,
go
he goes on to say lowering corporate income tax rates, and I guess supposedly we'll have loopholes closed, et cetera, we tried that with Ronald Reagan, and even Fred Grandy on Lawrence Kudlow, of all places, as I'm sitting next to him, says, I was in the Congress when we did that. We lowered the rates, we closed the loopholes, and within 16 months, all those loopholes were back open again, and the rates
were just down. That's what I was going to say. It generally, first of all, some of them don't get closed. Second of all, if you have to close some of them, which they sometimes do to reform these things, that's wonderful in the short term, so it all works for like a year. And then these loopholes, as long as the moneyed influences have the impact they have, as we've just discussed this whole show, on our system, then they're going to be able to open those loopholes yet again.
Right. I mean, the real question is, the fundamental question is, should we be taking X amount of income and wealth in taxes, whether it's from corporate or whether it's from individuals? And how we get there is not the issue. Because we can figure that out once we can all agree on a number. Because if you believe that taxing corporations inhibits their hiring, or if you believe that taxing wealthy people inhibits job creators, or that you can tax them less and they'll actually produce more revenue, then there's no point in talking about reform because you believe fantastical things. And it doesn't matter how you reform it. If that's your principle, then there is no agreement there. So he goes on to draw two conclusions from the premises above. First, vanquishing the Republicans and electing the Democrats won't suffice to solve the country's problems. Instead, it will lead to a kinder, gentler form of American decline. I don't even know what American decline means in this context.
It's a very unique kind of decline.
Because in his notion, you can have American ascendancy and have poorer senior citizens. And that
right.
does not make sense to me. You can have, I mean, he is setting up a notion.
And let me also throw something else out there, which obviously he doesn't know, which is Social Security is the biggest social insurance program for children. Children who lose their parents, so to say that it only even, I mean, not to say that if it was just helping the elderly, he'd be right, but he's wrong in his premise anyhow. And it's not just it's a program that takes care of spouses. It's a program that takes care of children of those lost. So he's wrong.
But let's focus in on what this statement means. It will lead instead to a kinder, gentler form of American decline. So in other words, I mean, what does that mean? What does that mean?
I don't know. You heard George H.W. Bush say the phrase and thought it sounded cool.
Well, but what does American decline mean to him? I mean, if we have a kinder, gentler, in other words, well, the American, what is it that he says will decline? If we are able to make sure that senior citizens are not eating cat food, if we are able to ensure more people get health insurance, and because of that, healthcare access and lead healthier lives, ones with more dignity in their goal, in their retirement years, what does that mean then? But we'll still. Right,
and it's important to me is what does it mean? He goes on a big thing about, oh, we have to cut healthcare spending, and we have to cut Medicare, and I know what he's talking about. But, of course, in the ways he wants to cut it is the amount of benefits given to people, which is insane. I want to cut those things, too. I think we should cut the hell out of them. In fact, it would be really easy. You want to cut the amount we spend on Medicare? Cool. Give HHS the right, like every other civilized country, to bulk negotiate with pharmaceutical companies over prescription drugs. Guess what? They'll be a lot cheaper, but we didn't do that in our healthcare plan. Allow reimportation from Canada and Japan, places like that, that spend 40% less or more on their prescription drugs because we're being ripped off. That'll lower the price of prescription drugs here too. But we, you know, for Medicare and for any healthcare program. No, we won't do that either. You know, allow a public option to compete with healthcare. Better yet, single payer. And then we become like Medicare, which is the most efficient and productive, healthcare program in the world that has the lowest administrative costs and the rest. But, I mean, there are a lot of ways to cut our healthcare costs. There's a reason why we spend so much damn more money than any European country or any other countries that you would put in our sort of equivalent to us in terms of industrial production and the rest. And the reason why is because we've chosen to let these private insurance markets rip us off.
Now, he goes on to ask, how do we develop a constituency for bolder answers that, in my view at least, tend to combine ideas that are to the left and to the right of the current debate? Now, this is sort of an amazing, his perspective on these things. Basically, what he's talking about is one that favors rich people. One that favors rich people who are willing to, in some way, invest in the future of America, roads, infrastructure, and education that will make rich people richer. And for him, that is a combination of both left and right ideas. Because the idea of just sort of investing in the future is what he ticks off as one as a left
right.
idea.
And he mixes in a few good ideas, like having an additional tax structure, which I think we should have, on people making more than $5 million a year. I'll give him that. Because to treat people who I've said this
but,
before.
But how is that a left idea when we already have the Democrats right. saying tax people above $1 million?
That's actually probably an 80% of the country idea.
If you think we need to slow the growth of Medicare and other health care spending substantially by bringing it more in line with other advanced nations per capita health spending and use some of the savings to shrink tuition at public colleges to an affordable level and not just save $10 a month in debted student and internet interest costs, what we're debating today, who's your candidate? Well, there's nobody who our candidate is. But
it wouldn't be his candidate.
Be his candidate.
I just went through what we could do to slow the growth of healthcare spending. It's actually really – it's kind of like with Social Security and other things. You know, if you want to solve any of these so-called problems, and in healthcare we really do have a problem, it's actually pretty simple. I mean, the studies are done. People have looked at these programs, people who are not partisan, and it's pretty simple, not to mention the fact that on the right they're always talking about actual competition but don't believe in it. Have a public option, have competition, the cost of healthcare goes down. You want the government spending less money on Medicare? You don't have to give fewer benefits to people. You can just have the government wasting less money, putting less money in the pockets of pharmaceutical companies. It's pretty easy.
He goes on
we
to say, if you think any leader serious about American renewal needs to be making the ending the Senate filibuster a centerpiece of his or her campaign because of the problems in the Senate, where is your champion? Well, first of all, this is insane. The idea that a president is going to run on filibuster reform as a presidential nominee is going to run on that is ridiculous. But we already have Harry Reid saying it. Right. So there.
Not to mention the fact that he's putting everything in his mind. This is what his dream candidate would look like. Does that mean that whoever came out of the American elect process would have looked like that?
No. Well, that's even beside the point. He's simply saying that this is going to shake things up from the center in some weird way. And it's just, there's absolutely no evidence. The only thing he uses the opportunity to talk about, if you think we should not guarantee the next generation of retirees a 30% real increase in initial Social Security benefits, as we do today, before we've guaranteed that every child in America has access to high-quality preschools and great teachers, which party represents your voice? Well, first off, there's two things here. One is, why is the choice necessarily between Social Security
exactly.
and education?
He sets up a false choice.
That's
how he gets
completely false choice. Second, and additionally, the reason why Social Security payments will rise 30% in real increase in benefits, it's only if you believe that the projections that show that the average real wage growth of will be basically 1%. So
I'll
in other words, more people will be paying in more money into Social Security and they'll get more benefits because their wages will grow. That's the way the
right.
system's supposed to work.
Right. I mean, if he wants to set up a real choice, should we stay in Afghanistan or should kids have access to universal preschool,
exactly.
for example? I mean, that's just an example. I mean, and I haven't sat here, although there are some defense experts who have. I can't think of the organization he works with, but Winslow Wheeler, who took on John McCain, and I interviewed him for my book. And he just has gone through. He was a Republican for 30 years, worked for Republicans, and went through this just enormous list of defense programs that could be cut, and that were not that were completely useless. They were not helping our actual defense, and were just there because of defense contractors. And I mean, it goes on and on. Obviously, there's so many. We just talked about them in this show, from getting rid of the cap on the payroll tax at $110,000 to bulk negotiation of drugs to by the federal government for Medicare to cutting defense spending, not going into stupid wars. There's so many ways you could balance this budget tomorrow. If you really were honest about wanting to do it, while still giving universal health care, universal preschool, and the rest, I mean, it's easily done. It's just it's where your priorities are and where the choices are you set up. And he sets up false choices. It's not a choice between kids and the elderly. It's a choice between all of us and people in the top 0.1%. That's what the choice is.
If I had my 360, I'd be hitting the bell right now. But I haven't. I'm playing around with the new system. And I haven't quite loaded some sounds on it. But, Cliff, sadly, we've run out of time because I've got to get to John Benjamin today. This is a story we'll be talking a lot more because,
well,
you know, our politics are so screwed up, and he wants to know where any pressure is going to come to change this. It is not going to come from more money in politics. It's not going to come from a politician who says cut Social Security and that's the only way we can fund education. And if anybody who thinks that they're going to cut Social Security and they're going to put it into education, they're insane.
Right.
They're insane.
And I'll say the final sort of closing the door on this, the irony of his whole column is that he sits there and he talks about people decrying Americans elect, and it's just this centrist thing that represents the pundit class in Washington or whatever, and then writes a column that completely represents those views,
yes.
of exactly the views that exist only in Washington. Cut Social Security, you know, all these other things that no one in the rest of the country, to the tune of 80% of the rest of the country, agrees with, except for people sitting there.
One has to wonder,
it's like a caricature is what it is.
One has to wonder if they actually have to sort of pipe in oxygen into that bubble in which he lives.
I think that's the perfect way to end the segment.
Indeed. Cliff Schechter, as usual, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Sam.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get John Benjamin of Archer and Bob's Burgers, and John Benjamin Has a Van, and actually, Who's the Caboose, which is on Netflix, on the phone in just a moment. But today's musical break is coming from the official heavy metal band of the Majority Report. Of course, I'm talking about Muckraker. And we have a link to their stuff on majority.fm. We will put it up there if you want to go buy their album or check out their stuff. And this is a song that they had developed, I guess, quite a while ago. We are the Majority, Some of you may want to turn up your radios or your computers or your phones. Some of you may want to turn it down if you're not a heavy metal fan, because this what a heavy metal people.
We're about to melt your brains.
We're about to melt your brains. We'll be right back after this. All right, we are back, and as you know, this is the segment where I get my Netflix recommendations from, and today it'll be from John Benjamin. John,
is this not your natural day?
What?
Hey. Hello?
John?
It's the unspoken truth of humanity.
What, can you turn down your computer, or what, are you listening?
I'm doing a movie review right now.
You what?
I'm going to do the movie review.
Yes. Do you have something on in the, do you have your computer on? We're going to do the movie.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. You got to talk just a little bit louder.
Well, I can't really, because I'm at the movies.
You're what?
They're on their
I'm at the movies. I'm going to review the movie, but I didn't get a chance to see it this week, so I'm here now.
Wait a second. I can't. You're at a movie?
The Avengers, yeah.
Did you say you're at the Avengers movie?
Yeah, the movie I was going to review, but
last time I was in Germany,
I can't. Are you in a movie theater right now? Are you in a movie theater right now?
I'm at the movie right now, yeah. I review it.
Dude, this is not, you're not supposed to be at a movie. You're not supposed to be at a movie. You're supposed to review a movie. Did you say you can't talk because there's a big action scene? I can't hear you. You got to talk a little louder.
Well, I can't leave. I can't review it.
You're at the movie. You can't review it. Is there a bathroom you can go into? What are you doing there? You're supposed to tell me a Netflix movie.
Well, I thought you said review a movie, but you didn't talk about Netflix.
No, I didn't say go to a movie. I said give me a movie.
I know, but I didn't have time this week, so I can review the first 20 minutes of it.
But, dude, you're going to review the first 20 minutes of a movie that's in a theater from a theater?
Yeah, because that's the only chance I got to know, so I can review the first 20 minutes of The Avengers.
You're going to review the first 20 minutes of The Avengers?
Yes. I mean, that's all I can do right now. I didn't watch any Netflix movies. Just
kidding. All right, what happened in the first 20 minutes of The Avengers?
So far, it's like, if you don't know anything about the Avengers, they're like a group of comic book superheroes that protect the Earth. Somebody is bumped out of a helicopter.
Dude, you got to speak up louder. You're in a matinee.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you got to just talk a little louder.
Okay, basically, it's about this group of superheroes.
It's about a group of superheroes.
Yeah, that's the beginning. That's right. They're being Earth is under threat by this other galaxy called Asgard, where Thor is from.
Dude, I can't hear what you're saying. You're in a movie theater.
Wait, hold on. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Are you actually in a movie theater?
Yeah, I had to leave. the point is I can't review the rest of the movie because now I can't see it. I'm in the lobby. But anyway, the movie started where there's this group of superheroes called the Avengers, and the world is under threat by Asgard, this place in another galaxy where Thor is from. And right now, it's like there's a lot of exposition. They're like collecting all the superheroes together, but I'm only like 25 minutes
John,
in.
This is not
so I got to go back in and I can...
This is not the segment.
This is, but I can call you later at the
Netflix
end of the movie and tell you what the whole thing
is. No,
about.
This is the show. We're doing the show right now.
I know, but you said review a movie, so I'm at the movie. I just didn't get...
No, Netflix movie.
I don't
want to
keep repeating myself.
Netflix movie. Netflix. The whole thing is that I can't go out to the movies. And who's ever heard of reviewing a movie in the middle of the movie?
Hey, well, I can't... I came to the movie. I'm at the movie.
No, I know. No, I got that part because we heard the whole... We heard, I guess, like minute 21 to 24 of the movie.
Well, I understand that, but now I'm missing to the movie. It was at a crucial part in the beginning.
Well, the inciting event should have happened in the first 12 minutes anyways.
Well, I have to say, the best part so far in like 35 minutes was there was this big like battleship, and it turned into a flying battleship, and then it became invisible. But that's the part way to leave on, and they're just starting to fight Loki, the guy from the other... So I got to go back in.
Well, wait a second. I guess there's not much going on in terms of show business for you, right? Because you're going to see a movie at 12 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well, yeah, I'm doing it because you asked me to. Now you're telling me I could have stayed home and watched a Netflix movie.
No, I said that from the beginning.
Yeah, I wouldn't have come to the movies if I... If you didn't say, like, hey, can you go review a movie this week?
That's not what I said. I said, can you do the movie review? It's always a Netflix or a streaming
movie. This is what a
movie
review is. I'm sorry that I didn't get it. A movie review is going to a movie and then reviewing it.
You didn't do that. You didn't do that. You went to a movie. And then during the movie.
Because I was going to see it yesterday, but I couldn't. I didn't get a chance. So now I'm here today.
Well, so
look, I'm going back in. All right, I'm gonna just go back in and see the movie.
All right. Well, I guess we'll do.
I'll review it next week.
All right, we'll do it next week.
I just kept the receipt, so it was $14.
I'm sorry.
I said I kept the receipt, so I'll bring it to you when I see you next week. It's $14 for the movie.
You went to a matinee and paid $14.
It's not cheap to go to a movie anymore. What are you, from the 70s?
I haven't been to a movie. Well, that was the whole point of the Netflix thing. All right, well, go in. I guess we won't get the review of this 10 minutes of the movie.
Well, like I said, the first 20 minutes, my review as it is, as it stands, is that there's too much exposition. There's too much of them going out and finding each particular member of the Avengers. It took too long to build, but I don't know. Now that it could get better.
Great.
I mean, and it, you know, it looks good and stuff.
It looks good.
So far, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, just FYI, the best way to do a movie review is after...
Thor.
All right, John.
Iron Man just made his first appearance.
What?
I mean, it's the part where they all come together.
Okay. All right. Well, enjoy the movie. What just happened?
Iron Man and Thor are fighting.
Iron Man and Thor are fighting? Why would they fight?
Because there's this whole thing about Asgard, and I think Thor is like torn.
It's over in Asgard?
Asgard's where Thor is from.
They're having a fight over in Asgard.
No, not in Asgard. Thor is from the planet Asgard.
I don't know if you can say that on radio. Thor's from the planet. What?
I can't hear you anymore, man. This fight's really loud.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Okay. That was great. That, well, I guess the good news is I'll get a chance to catch up on my, on the past movies. That was not.
Did you give him permission, by the way, to not only go to the movie?
No!
But on top of that, $14, that means he went and spent the extra on 3D on your dime.
It was 3D?
Yes. He could have got the cheaper ticket.
He didn't go spend it on my dime. I never told him to do it in the first place.
That's what he thinks.
I never told him to go to the movie. That's the problem with Benjamin. That's why his shows got canceled.
Hey, if you're gonna
he doesn't listen.
If you're gonna send people to movie theaters to review movies, by all means, I'll do the movie reviews each and every week.
That's the point. I didn't send him anywhere.
Let's drill, baby, drill, not stall, baby, stall.
That woman is an idiot.
Here it is. The Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that party. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Endless taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him, we didn't want a garden variety politician. Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. Yeah. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
All right, I guess we will we'll take some phone calls. 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. Let me just do one story before we get there. You know, we talked about birtherism. Now, back on the scene, and the Breitbart people have found a document, a publicity document from Obama's first book, I guess it was, that, and in that book, he talks about being born in Hawaii, but yet it is nefariously someone on the bio of the publicity document said that he was born in Kenya. And this is the evidence now. And, of course, we don't know if this is the case, but the Arizona Secretary of State is threatening to remove Obama from the ballot. He spoke to Arizona radio host Mike Broomhead Thursday, said he requested the confirmation 8 weeks ago and has not gotten it. Hawaii, he said, does not have to supply a certified copy of the birth certificate, merely sending him an email confirming that it has one. Asked by Broomhead. Now, we have seen multiple occasions where officials from Hawaii have publicly released the birth certificate or copies of it. They have signed testimony, signed affidavits saying they have seen it, that it exists. But this guy needs a special email for him. Asked by Broomhead, would he remove Obama's name from the ballot if Hawaii fails to comply? Think about this. I'm going to remove a presidential nominee's name from a ballot if a state in which he has no control over doesn't comply to my wishes. But that's possible. I may do it. Or I may ask the president to submit a certified copy of the birth certificate, which we already know Hawaii will not release. Bennett, Secretary of State, asserted that he's not a birther. And this is what his quote was. I believe the president was born in Hawaii, or at least I hope he was. Unbelievable. I got to say that if you were, if you had the theory that perhaps the Republicans are trying to throw this election, it would be hard to argue against it. They're just so crazy. All right, folks. That is the lesser half of our program today. If you want to hear the better half of the show, and you're not listening live, you need to become a member of the Majority Report, because it is only your membership that supports this program. Only your membership. I mean, yes, we get a kickback on if you click through our Amazon link to buy any of your Amazon junk and you bookmark it and always use it. And yes, we get a little coffee and cash from justcoffee.coop, fair trade, organic, delicious coffee, tea, or chocolate. Coupon code MAJORITY gets 10% off. And yes, we've got merch. And yes, you can help us out by giving us a rating on iTunes. It's easy to do. It certainly helps. But it's your membership that supports this program, keeps it alive. The number is 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. You can IM me at Majority FM. We'll see you in the better half.